content of this program is intended for people who are blind or print impaired. Hello, this is Amy Wentley for the North Carolina Reading Service, and this is Out in the Garden. For the next half hour, I will be reading to you from a magazine called In Her Garden. It's a quarterly magazine published by, Stampington and Company. They do a bunch of different publications for people who are makers and creative and that sort of thing. So, the first article I am going to read today is called An Herbalist's Healing Garden, and this is from the spring 2026 issue. An Herbalist's Healing Garden by Brittany Stowasser. Brittany is a passionate gardener and herbalist living in West Virginia. To see more of her garden and learn more about herbalism, visit Instagram at b.yoga.massage and Facebook Brittany Stowasser, Stowasser, Yoga and Massage. As a child, I cherished story times about a precious bunny stealing carrots and hideaways in secret gardens. The stories on those perfect, glossy book pages offered a magic I couldn't shake. Being transported to these magical gardens captivated my full attention. Several decades later, they still hold a special place in my heart. We moved quite a bit when I was younger. We were a railroad family in search of opportunity and growth. In between moves, we lived with my grandma one summer in Mount Airy, North Carolina, the home of the Andy Griffith Show. From her front porch swing, you could see Pilot Mountain in the distance. Since the old farmhouse was without central air, we spent our days outside. Always an early riser, at the farm I would wake up first, so thrilled to spend the day with my grandma, Helen. She was pure magic to a little inquisitive kid like me. She would sew quilts, throw pottery, and she even had a greenhouse out back. As soon as she had a few sips of her morning coffee, I started following her around. First, we'd go out to the porch and visit the plants out front. I remember when she realized that the berries were ready to pick. This, to me, was the most amazing thing in the whole world. "You mean I can eat that?" I asked. She laughed and told me, "Yes." Just when I thought it couldn't get any better, she took me around the back of the farm and showed me an overgrown thicket on the gray barn filled with red raspberries and blackberries. I had the job of running back to the house and getting bowls to fill. We picked and picked. Grandma Helen's greenhouse was filled with plants started in used egg cartons and cut-out milk jugs. Nothing in her home or greenhouse ever went to waste. After showing me the seedlings she had planted, we'd leave the greenhouse for the west side of the house, where the largest, most gorgeous blue hydrangeas grew. That summer, on her 25-acre farm, was simple, hot, and beautiful. We did this walk every morning. I asked her every question under the sun, and she patiently answered each one. Looking back, I'm so glad I did now. In my childhood home in West Virginia, there were signs of this outdoor upbringing. Both of my parents are incredible cooks, so there were always homegrown chilies drying from the ceiling for my father's winter chili, and at least one batch of tomatoes growing in the side yard. Later, in my 20s, I grew yellow cherry tomatoes, basil, and oregano. I called it my spaghetti garden. Even my husband's families were farmers. My father-in-law, Ted, introduced me to something I knew very little about: trees, roots, and herbs. He referred to things with what I call the mountain names. When I had a terrible cold once, he told me to make a tea from what he called yellow root, and it would cure my cold. He was right, of course, and I later found out that the root was actually ginseng. I began following Ted, too, on walks around the farm. He knew every tree, root, and leaf that grew there. The family held a very special kind of intelligence. Through their canning, preserving, drying, hot toddies, and salves, they took care of one another. It was intentional and generational. I couldn't get enough. Reading books on natural remedies and taking an herbalism course. Eventually, my husband and I moved out to the country for more space. Once the previous owners mentioned, "Oh, there's also a blackberry thicket," the rest was history. After moving in, one night I had the most vivid dream about a gorgeous garden. I was so excited that when I woke up, I described it for my husband so he could draw it. He captured it perfectly. It had a white picket fence around the perimeter, an arbor, flowers all around, four large beds, and a cross in the middle. My birthday was coming up, and he offered to build it as a gift. We rolled up our sleeves and got to work. I traded blackberries from my yard for blue hydrangeas. My mom bought me a rose bush, and slowly it started to take shape. We allowed our then 5-year-old daughter to have her own bed in the garden, with the only catch being that she had to try any vegetables she grew. This is how our particular picky eater, learned to love cucumbers and green peppers while also growing morning glories just because she loved them. The garden is a labor of love, a thank you to my ancestors, and a rooted place after all my following around of others. It's where I planted roots. It's my healing garden. Beyond the basics of growing our own food to heal our bodies, I wanted to dive deeper. Motivated by an autoimmune condition that began to show up in my 20s, I dug headfirst into herbalism. I grew lemon balm for tea to help calm my nervous system and bee balm to make salves for the eczema that would annoy me regularly. I learned that comfrey and licorice root were balms to an uneasy stomach, and I started making teas, herbal bone broths, and tinctures for family members who had colds or flus. When my twin sister was curled up on my couch with a fever and I handed her a mug of tea with homegrown echinacea, she said, "You know, being sick stinks, but your house is the best place ever to be sick." Providing comfort through healing herbs is one of my greatest passions. It feels like the simplest and greatest form of alchemy. Now I share these herbal concoctions with my family, friends, and clients. My dear friend Lauren, who learned along the way with me, has a mini farm, and we share the goods we make. I make the remedies seasonally, and preserving things at the height of their efficacy also increases their potency and taste. I'm a firm believer that herbal remedies can taste lovely, too. It's one of my greatest joy to teach people that a root like valerian or marshmallow that doesn't taste particularly good on their own can taste delicious with organic chamomile or spices. Our garden contains 4 4-foot by 8-foot beds. One is typically reserved for early strawberries. This year, we dedicated one to tomatoes, from Roma to mortgage lifters, and another to green peppers, banana peppers, Hungarian wax peppers, and infernos. In the last bed, we usually grow cucumbers and squash. Cold crops we like to grow are kale, cabbage, broccoli, and celery. I've even overwintered a few turnips. My favorite herbs are hyssop, that's a natural cough expectorant remedy that is also deer resistant, rosemary, thyme, echinacea, sage, oregano, basil, lemon balm, cilantro, chamomile, peppermint, and spearmint. The herbs line the pathways and porches throughout the warmer months. In the fall, to extend longevity, we use a cold box, which is a 2.5 foot by 4 foot by 3 foot structure made of plexiglass and boards built by my husband. The box protects plants from milder temperatures and also works in the spring as a small porch-friendly greenhouse to start seedlings. The perimeter of the garden houses a variety of flowers, including Moonlight in Paris, Peach Rose, Niobe Clematis, and Red Cottage Rose, White Azalea, Blue Hydrangeas, and Yellow Daylilies. The entire garden is 30 foot by 30 foot, but produces that of a much larger garden. It's proof that if it's used efficiently, you don't have to have an enormous amount of space. Here is a list of 5 beginner-friendly herbs to grow. 1 is lemon balm, a calming, uplifting herb that thrives in containers or porch pots. Fresh leaves make a soothing tea. The 2nd is echinacea, wonderfully hardy and pollinator-friendly. Dry the flowers for an immune-supportive herbal tea. Lavender loves dry, rocky soil and sun, perfect for sachets, tea blends, and homemade room sprays. Roses. Petals can be simmered to create a delicate floral essence for toners and mood-lifting aromatherapy. Tulsi. Holy basil. A staple for cold and flu season. Excellent for respiratory steams and comforting herbal infusions. Composting is a year-round event at our house. We compost teas, eggshells, coffee grounds, fruit peels, and cores. By spring, after the ground softens, our soil looks beautiful and is ready for planting. We also have a rain barrel that we use to water our garden in drier months and droughts. We use diatomaceous earth as a bug repellent and don't use hard chemicals near any of the plants. We even rip up tattered t-shirts to use the strips to support the tomato plants. Much like our ancestors, we make sure everything is used well and as sustainably as possible. As herbalists, healing gardens don't appear overnight. It grows from memories, from the hands that came before us, from every question asked on a morning walk, and from the quiet longing to root ourselves in something meaningful. My garden is a soil quilt of generations, threads from my grandmother, parents, my father-in-law, my husband, my daughter, my friends, and now my own hands. It is a place where comfort is cultivated, where wisdom is carried forward, and where the simple act of tending becomes an offering. My hope is that anyone who steps into this space or reads these words feels inspired to create their own version of a healing garden, no matter how small. Healing doesn't always begin in a clinic or a classroom. Sometimes it begins with a single seed. Our next article is It Started with the Peonies. This article is written by Carrie Bancroft, and Carrie Bancroft's garden and studio is located in Matthews, North Carolina. Her work can be found at carriebancroft.com and on Instagram and Facebook at K-A-R-E-Y Bancroft, B-A-N-C-R-O-F-T. Sign up for her newsletter on her website and receive 2 free phone screen wallpapers or flowers from her garden. The year 2020 was challenging for everyone. It was also the year I turned 60, and I found myself at a crossroads. I had been a professional portrait photographer most of my career, but that business practically disappeared overnight. I was bored, anxious, and uncertain what to do with my future. My husband and I made a cross-country move to Charlotte, North Carolina, where my daughter's family was living. I was so happy to be near my grandsons again. I began planning the landscaping for our new home, starting with a few David Austin roses, some pink Sarah Bernhardt peonies, and tulip bulbs I bought online. The next year, the tulips came up in full force, and the roses were thriving. My peonies didn't bloom right away, but once they did the following year, it was an explosion of gorgeous pink ruffled blooms. It was at that moment, with an armload of peonies, that I felt the urge to try for more, to start a real garden. Every year since, I have planted new varieties in larger quantities, ranunculus, irises, dahlias, hydrangea, foxglove, poppies, anemones, scabiosa, nigella. I had been bitten by the gardening bug, and that was such a blessing. Every morning I was excited to go out and check my latest seedlings and tend to the garden or cut flowers for my kitchen. At the peak of my growing frenzy, I started more than 600 plants from seed. My husband was rolling his eyes at this point, as there were seed trays and growing lights all over the house. When my cuttings filled vases on a regular basis, I began to wonder if I should photograph them to preserve their beauty. I started down a new rabbit hole, collecting vases and props to create portraits of my flowers. I was combining two things I loved, and it made me so happy. I felt rejuvenated and hopeful that maybe I was on a path to a possible new chapter for my career. My floral images were picked up by a gallery, and slowly I started making sales of my photographs and winning awards. In the fall of 2024, I entered a prestigious competition, Art Pop, where 20 winners out of 400 are chosen annually to have their work displayed on billboards all over the city of Charlotte, as well as nationwide. I was completely shocked when I got the call that I had been chosen for the class of 2025. My work had been featured on billboards, buses, lobby displays, and even on 96-foot billboard found in Times Square in New York City. At the same time, I began experimenting with collages of my flower photos, and I saw the possibility of using this work as not just art, but also for product design. In early 2025, we moved to a different home, and the landscaping projects began immediately. Now, I was planting hundreds of tulips and daffodils, dozens of shrub and climbing garden roses, azaleas, camellias, clematis vines, coleus, oak leaf hydrangeas, hellebore, foxglove, and more than 60 kinds of dahlias, and a new peony garden with 24 varieties. My new garden will take a couple of years to mature, but right now I'm excited every morning to cut new blooms from my above-ground boxes and photograph them to use in collages. I try to only use flowers that I have grown in my work. But sometimes I fill in with blooms from local flower farmers. I now have original work and products featured in a local gallery, a museum store, and on my website. And I'm planning to open a brick-and-mortar store Carrie's Flower Shop this year. My garden flowers are featured on party goods and Mahjong accessories, as well as greeting cards, silk scarves, tote bags, pillows, and more. What a thrill at this time in my life. Flowers have been a magical gift to me. I never thought I would care about gardening when I was younger, and now the joy they bring me is remarkable. I've got my eye on a greenhouse in the near future, and I'd love to start Oh, excuse me. Just lost my place for a second. And I'd love to start a few seedlings again and possibly grow vegetables. Even my husband is thinking about starting his own small garden. The possibilities ahead are endless, and I am excited about the future. My grandsons are learning about the wonder that can be found in the garden by helping me stake plants and bury seeds. What I now know for sure is that a few peony plants changed my life forever, and I will never stop loving, learning about, and photographing my garden blooms. And our author comes with some garden secrets, so these are my garden secrets. Set yourself up for success. Start with flowers that are easy to grow, like zinnias and tulips, and accept the idea that you are going to kill a lot of flowers along the way. It's how you learn. You can purchase live ladybugs at a nursery or garden center. Letting them loose in your garden is not only magical, but they also eat many harmful insects. I find them all year after releasing them in the spring. When planting flowers that will grow to more than 12 inches high, like my 9-foot dahlias last summer, be sure to stake each. Stake each individual plant before it gets any taller. This will save you so much chaos and frustration later. Our next piece is a garden DIY, and it's entitled Spring Botanical Facial Steam. It's by a woman named Julian Lindstedt, and she writes and creates from her sunny studio in New Jersey. She shares seasonal recipes, natural living projects, and creative inspiration that invite readers to connect with the beauty of every day. Julia welcomes inquiries for recipes, collaborations, and creative support at hello@afarmtokeep.com. So, Spring Botanical Facial Steam by Julia Lindstedt. Pamper yourself this spring and bid farewell to dry winter skin with a nourishing facial steam featuring a bouquet of floral botanicals and herbs. Facial steaming is a relaxing way to revitalize and deeply cleanse the skin, and it is a safe and easy method to add herbal remedies to your self-care routine. This calming facial steam is made with a host of dried flowers and herbs that are relaxing, soothing, and known to soften the skin. And it couldn't be easier to make. Combine your favorite botanical and herbal ingredients in a bowl and cover them with boiling water to enjoy radiant, refreshed skin in minutes. You can personalize the recipe to your liking and include other botanicals depending on your personal skincare needs. This recipe features a combination of dried floral and herbal ingredients known for their soothing and hydrating properties. Rose petals rejuvenate the skin. Lavender moisturizes and calms the skin. Marshmallow soothes redness. Chamomile reduces inflammation. Mint opens the airways and uplifts the spirits, and calendula softens the skin and adds a radiant glow. Mix up the ingredients for a one-time facial steam or double the recipe and store in glass containers for up to 6 months. It also makes beautiful handcrafted gifts for friends and loved ones. So what you'll need is you're going to need a large bowl. You're going to need about 2 tablespoons of calendula flowers, 2 tablespoons of chamomile, and these are dried, by the way. You need distilled water for boiling, about 6 to 8 cups. You'll need dried lavender buds, 2 tablespoons, marshmallow root leaves, 2 tablespoons, mint leaves, dried, 1 tablespoon, a mortar and pestle, rose petals, dried, 1 tablespoon, a teapot, a thermometer, and a towel. To make, you're going to crush the flowers in a mortar and pestle. And this step is optional, but it's recommended because it releases the therapeutic oils in the flowers. Add all the ingredients to a large bowl and stir them to combine. And then pour the boiling distilled water to cover the dried ingredients. Place a towel over the mixture and allow the herbs to steep for 5 to 10 minutes. Before beginning the facial steam process, check the temperature of the water with a thermometer to ensure that it's not too hot. The optimal temperature for facial steam is 110 degrees Fahrenheit. Add cold water if needed to reach the optimal temperature. Sit close enough in front of the bowl that you can feel the steam on your face. If you feel any burning on your skin, wait a little longer for the water to cool. And place a large towel over the top of your head and the bowl. And choose a towel that will comfortably drape over your head and the sides of the bowl and trap the steam. Breathe in deeply and breathe out slowly, enjoying the aroma of the herbs. Close your eyes, relax, and enjoy this calming beauty ritual for 5 to 10 minutes, or as long as desired. Pat your face dry and apply your favorite moisturizer to enjoy the hydrating benefits of steam all day long. After the steam, add the herbal water and herbs to your bath, foot, or hand soak, or use it as a hair rinse once it has cooked. There are some events coming up at the J.C. Ralston Arboretum in Raleigh. The midweek program coming up on March 18th, 2026 is about top five spring bulbs, and that is hosted by Tim Alderton, who is the head horticulturist at the Arboretum. And that is actually recorded, and you can watch it on YouTube anytime you'd like, although it goes live at 3 o'clock p.m. on Wednesday, March 18th. Thursday the 19th is forest bathing, so you can show up in person to the Arboretum, bring a friend, and you can have a guided journey into nature's wisdom with Sean Ramsey. That's at 1 o'clock p.m. on Thursday, the 19th of March, 2026. And on Friday, Saturday, the 21st of March, is the North American Rock Garden Society Lecture, Elizabeth Lawrence and Her Raleigh Gardening Years. This is hosted by Bobby Ward. It's at 10 a.m. on Saturday, March 21st. And there will be another forest bathing session on Sunday, the 22nd at 10 a.m. So it looks like we're coming to a close. We've run out of time today. This is Out in the Garden. We hope you enjoyed listening. Please join us next time. I'm Amy Wentley, reading for the North Carolina Reading Service. The content of this program is intended for people who are blind or print impaired. Out in the Garden is available as a podcast at our website, ncreadingservice.org. Call us, 919-832-5138. Thank you for listening.